welcome to our Double Your Time Off, Double Your Productivity, Double Your Time Off seminar, and of course, Double Your Income as well. We're going to show you a series of strategic techniques, tactics that have been used by the most and are used by the most successful and highest paid people in our society. Now, here's an interesting opening is that every one of us has 24 hours a day. No matter how badly we use our 24 hours every morning, just like the old milkman used to come and leave the milk on the steps, every morning you get 24 fresh, beautiful, golden hours. Every morning you have a new choice. Every morning you can decide what you're going to do with those hours. Now, here's another point. It's no one's better than you. No one's smarter than you. If they have a better education for now or if they're further ahead of you in life now, remember, everybody started at the back of the line. Everybody starts off with nothing in our society, and then they use their time in a particular way, and as a result, they accomplish vastly more than the others. There's all kinds of research that shows that people who are successful are people who do things that lead to greater success, and people who are unsuccessful do things that waste their time. Now, here's another important point, is you cannot save time. You cannot save time. You can only spend it differently. And when I heard that many years ago, I almost fell off my chair. You cannot save time. You can only spend it differently. You can only reallocate your time and use it on things of higher value. Now, what are the things of higher value? The things of higher value are the things that bring you more of the things that you say you want in life. They're not the things that your boss says or that society says. It's more of the things that you want: happiness, health, higher income, greater, better lifestyle, nicer home, car, all those things that you want, that you say you want, you can get if you just spend your time differently. If you just invest it differently, you get a different return. So you don't have to take notes on this program, by the way, because we'll send you notes afterwards. All you have to do is just listen and follow along. And the only things you write are the ideas that pop into your mind as I'm talking. And you hear the idea pop into your mind. You hear something that you think can be helpful to you or something that will even come from outer space, be sure to jot it down so that you don't forget it. Well, when I began my career, I began it very humbly. I did not graduate from high school, as you know. I worked at laboring jobs for several years. And then finally I got into sales. And in sales I spun my wheels for month after month, getting up early in the morning, knocking on doors all day long, working in the evenings, knocking on apartment doors and home doors, barely making a living, until finally one day I went and I asked the top salesman of my company, a gentleman who was earning 10 times as much as anybody else, I asked him, what are you doing differently from me? And he told me, and I did it, and my sales went up. And from that day forward, I kept asking other top people what they did. I read their books. I listened to their audio programs. I attended their seminars. I took notes. And whatever I learned, I ran out and took action on immediately. And my sales went up and up and up, and they made me a sales manager. And as a sales manager, I taught the same things to my sales team that I had learned, and their sales went up and up, and many of them today are millionaires and multimillionaires. And finally, I was in charge of 6 countries. I was making more money in a week than I had made in a year before, simply by using my time better and practicing proven success techniques. But what I learned from this process, which changed my life, was the simple law of cause and effect. The law of cause and effect says that nothing happens by accident, that there is a reason for everything, that if you initiate the causes, you get the effects. And if your effect is to double your income, double your time off, double your productivity, well, then you simply do the things that other people who are producing twice as much as you are doing, and you soon get the same results. As I said, nobody's smarter than you, nobody's better than you, they're just using different techniques. Well, the most important principle of or application of the law of cause and effect is the philosophic principle that thoughts are causes and conditions are effects. Your thoughts create the conditions of your life. And this is the foundation principle of all religion, all philosophy, all metaphysics, all psychology, all success, is your thoughts create your own life. And so you can actually change the direction of your life, like changing the guidance mechanism in a rocket. You can change the direction of your life by simply changing your thoughts. And fortunately, there's only one thing in the entire world that you have control over, and that is your thinking. And that's all you need to become one of the most productive and most successful people in life. Now, the greatest of all principles, the biggest discovery in human history, going back for thousands of years, is this. It is that you become what you think about most of the time. You become what you think about most of the time. So the key question is, what do you think about most of the time? Now, at the University of Pennsylvania, they did a 22-year study. They interviewed 350,000 salespeople and entrepreneurs like yourself, and they tracked them over a two-year period, and they called them every week, and they asked them, what are you thinking about right now? And over time, they found that the top 10% of people, like the people on this call, the top 10% thought very differently from the bottom 80 or 90%. And can you guess what top people think about most of the time? Well, sometimes I ask my audiences this, and they're always astonished that top people think about what they want and how to get it. It's as simple as that. But it's so overwhelmingly simple that it's almost embarrassing. Top people think about what they want very clearly and how to get it most of the time. What do unsuccessful, unhappy people think about and talk about? They think and talk about what they don't want, the things that make them mad and the things that make them angry and their problems and their bills and their past experiences. And they think about who's to blame for all their problems. It's their parents, it's their boss, it's the market, it's the economy. It's always something else. For mediocre people, always something outside themselves is to blame for the things that are making them unhappy in their own life. But top people say, hey, if it's to be, it's up to me. And what they think about is what they want and how to get it. So there are three qualities of entrepreneurial thinkers, three qualities of the most productive, happiest, most effective people in our society. The first is what do we call goal orientation, is top people think about their goals most of the time. They think about what they want most of the time. And there's a wonderful rule that says, when you turn toward the sunshine, the shadows fall behind you. So when you think about what you want, you can't think about what you don't want. Your mind is designed in such an amazing way that you can think thousands of thoughts in a row, but you can only think one thought at a time, positive or negative, good or bad, helpful or hurtful. And if you're thinking about what you want most of the time, you don't have time to think about the things that you don't want. So the mark of the superior person is that they think about what they want. They think about what they can do something about, rather than thinking about what they don't want or what happened in the past. And I'll talk about goal orientation in some detail. The second quality is result orientation. It's top people think about how to get it most of the time. They think about results most of the time. They think about getting the results that can help them improve the quality of their lives. It's not a great miracle. Average people think about coffee breaks and lunch and what they're going to do after work or what they're going to do instead of work and what they do in the evenings and weekends. But top people think about their goals, what they want, and they think about results, how to get it most of the time. So I want to teach you a go-forward word, and this is the go-forward word you're going to use for the rest of your career, and the word is how. Whenever you say the word how, you trigger ideas. And ideas are ideas for actions that you can take immediately to achieve better results. So whenever you have a goal, you want to double your income, double your time off, the only question you ask is how. Not whether it's possible or not, because we know it's possible, because there's hundreds of thousands of millions of people are earning twice as much as you, and they started off earning half as much as you. And they did certain things in a certain way, and now they earn twice as much or 5 or 10 times as much. And what hundreds of thousands and billions of other people have done, you can do as well. There's no limitation except the limitations you place on your own mind. So the third orientation is action orientation. All successful people are intensely action-oriented. They're always thinking in terms of what they can do immediately. They're always thinking in terms of actions that they can take now that will move them quickly in the direction of their goals. Many years ago, after I got into my 30s, I completed my education and took an MBA degree. And in the MBA degree, they teach what is called probability theory. And probability theory teaches you that there is a probability that everything can happen and that these probabilities can be calculated with some accuracy. But what you also learn in probability theory is that you can affect the probabilities in your life by increasing the likelihood that you will achieve the things that you want. And for example, if you're in sales, if you double the number of people that you call each day, you will double your income. Because if you're earning your entire income with the number of people you're calling today, and you double the number of people you call, not by luck, not by chance, but simply by probability, you'll double your income if you change nothing else. if you double your effectiveness at qualifying people, at presenting, at closing, and things like that, in each one of these cases, you'll probably double your income. It's the most amazing darn thing, is life is not a matter of chance or luck. It's simply a matter of probabilities. It's determined by law. And you can control the law by controlling the actions that you take. So here are seven keys to doubling your income and doubling your time off. And I call them the seven C's of success. The first C is clarity. Now, clarity is really the most important word in success. It's 95% of your success is going to be determined by the clarity with which you think, act, and achieve your goals. So you have to ask yourself, what is it that you really want? And one of the things that we encourage our graduates to do and our students like yourself is to imagine that you have a magic wand and that you can wave this magic wand over your life and you can make your life perfect in every way. And so we encourage you to idealize, to practice idealization, to fantasize a little bit, to imagine that you could be or have or do anything. You have no limitations at all. And we start off with the first part of clarity, which is your values. Your values are the things that you stand for. Your values are the words that people use to describe you when you're not there. And we know that successful people are very clear about their values, what they believe in: honesty, integrity, truth, hard work, love, faithfulness, fidelity, persistence, courage, creativity. They're very clear about what they believe in, and they don't compromise them. Unsuccessful people don't think very much about their values. They're quite fuzzy, and they're willing to compromise them for the slightest short-term advantage. So when you think of a great man or a great woman, you think of a person with great character. What is great character? It's a person who has great values, who doesn't compromise them. Now, the second part of clarity has to do with your vision. And with your vision, what we do is we encourage you to create what we call a five-year fantasy. Again, using the concept of idealizing. And a five-year fantasy means that you project forward 5 years and imagine that your life was perfect in every way. If you could wave a magic wand and your life was perfect in every way 5 years from now, what would it look like? What would you be doing? What would you no longer be doing? Who would you be with? Who would you no longer be with? What kind of money would you be making? What kind of job would you have? Where would you live? What kind of lifestyle would you have? And what you do is, like a kid's Christmas, you just make up a dream list, a fantasy list of what your life would look like if it was perfect in every way. And the most amazing darn thing happens is when you do this, you start to find yourself moving in the direction of making that vision a reality. At an unconscious level, you seem to reprogram your guidance mechanism, and you start unconsciously to do more of the things that move you in that direction and fewer of the things that don't move you in that direction, or even worse, move you away. So what is your vision? If somebody were to ask you, what is your dream 5 years from now, the greater clarity you have, the easier it will be for you to make decisions, and the more likely it will be that you will achieve it. The fourth part of clarity is your mission. Your mission is why you do what you do. You know, everyone is put on this earth to do something wonderful with their lives, to use their full potential and their talents to somehow improve or benefit the lives of other people. And all great people are people who are very clear about their mission. So what is your mission in life? What are you here to do? And one of the great exercises is to imagine you are financially independent. Imagine that you had $20 million in the bank, cash, tax-free. You could do anything you wanted in life. Is what would you want to do with your life? What would you want to dedicate your life to doing? And you find that all great men and women want to dedicate their life to doing something that helps other people. And that's their mission. That's why you were put on this earth. That's why you were given life and talents and opportunities and intelligence and experience and ability and so on, is to make a difference in the life of someone else. And finally, your purpose in life. And your purpose is the why you do what you do. Why do you get up in the morning? If all you do is get up in the morning to go to work to pay your bills, you'll have a very low level of motivation. But if you get up in the morning and your purpose is to do something wonderful with your life, then you'll have a high level of motivation. So clarity is important, and you can't become clear overnight. You can't say, okay, here it is. What you have to do is you have to review these. What is my vision? What are my values? What is my mission? What is my purpose? And then from that, what flows out is your goals. So you need to set clear goals in four areas of life. Based on our focal point process, the coaching programs that we teach, the four basic areas of life are your career, your family, your finances, and your level of health and fitness. So with regard to your career, the basic thing you ask is, how much do you want to earn and doing what? What are your career goals? What do you want to be earning 1 year, 2 years, 5 years from now? And what do you want to be doing? At what level? What kind of work do you want to be doing and with what kind of people? Where? What kind of a company? The rule is that people who do not plan for the future can't have one. But people who do plan for the future actually end up predicting that future. So what are your career goals? And then what is your family goal? Imagine that you could wave a magic wand and make your family life perfect in every way. What kind of a home would you live in? What kind of a lifestyle would you have? How would you spend time with your family? What kind of vacations would you take? What would you like to do for your family if you had all the time and all the money in the world? And then your finances. Your goal in life must be to become financially independent. And financial independence is something that escapes 80 to 90% of the population because they never think about it. And if they do think about it, they don't think about it intelligently. You know, you could live in a house with a beautiful kitchen and every single kind of kitchen utensil and all the finest foods and spices. But if you didn't know how to cook, it wouldn't do you a darn bit of good. And we live in the greatest country in the history of the world with fabulous opportunities and possibilities, more millionaires and billionaires in America than the whole rest of the world put together, and most people don't know how to cook. So what they do is they worry about money most of the time. Is they get up in the morning and they worry about how little money they have. And the reason they do this is because they have not learned how to manage their money properly. So you have to set a goal to become financially independent. And I have a basic rule for financial independence is you imagine how much it would cost for you to support your current lifestyle on a month-to-month basis if you had no income. So let's say if you had no debts, no bills, no income, it would cost you $5,000 a month to live. You know, to pay your utilities, to pay your food, pay your gas, and so on. Well, then you multiply that times 12 to get the amount you would need for a year. That's $60,000. You multiply that times 20 for the amount that you would need in order to retire comfortably and never have to work again. And that gives you 20 years of finances. That's $1.2 million. So by using this, your month times 12 times 20, you get the equivalent income for 240 months, $1.2 million. That becomes your goal for financial independence. If you need $10,000 a month, it's twice as much. And then you look at your current worth today, and you look at the number of years you have left to work, and then you draw a line between what you're worth today and what you need to be worth, and then you begin to break it down by the year, and then you ask yourself, how? How do I achieve this financial goal? And I can't go into that in great detail now, but wonderfully enough, it's incredible how many people have done this exercise and begun to change their entire financial lives. And in a few years, they're out of debt, they've got money in the bank, their house is paid off, they've got a large account growing, their investments are starting to yield as much as they're earning at work, and they achieve financial independence. But it's not going to happen by accident. It's not going to happen by random. And I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but you ain't going to win the lottery. So you're going to have to do it yourself. And the final goal you have to have is health and fitness. And in reality, that's your first goal. The good news is that you can live longer and live better today than has ever been possible in all of human history. We have the finest health care system in the world today if you take advantage of it. And so you can live to be 80, 90, 95 years old and still be dancing. So your job is to plan to take really, really good care of yourself. So imagine you could wave a magic wand and your level of health and fitness were perfect in every way. How much would you weigh? How fit would you be? How much would you exercise each week? How trim would you be? How would you feel when you got up in the morning? What kind of foods would you eat? What kind of a lifestyle would you have physically? And your job is to live a long, happy, healthy, pain-free life. And the time to start is now. So the next point, number three, is once you've decided on these goals, you decide how you will measure and how you will track success. Almost everything you can put a number to. If you want health and fitness, for example, you can say, all right, first number is my waist size. Waist size is a really good indication of your level of health and fitness. And another number that you can use is the number of minutes of exercise each week. How many minutes do you exercise each week? How many minutes do you just go for a walk each week? The basic rule is 200 minutes. You need 200 minutes a week. Some people are saying 300 minutes a week, 60 minutes a day, 6 days a week. And we're not talking about training for the Olympics. We're just talking about going for a walk, for heaven's sakes, instead of, you know, a sedentary occupation. With regard to your career, it's very easy to put numbers on your goals and put measures on your goals. The amount that you earn, the amount your income increases by, the amount that you receive after taxes. With your finances, it's the length of time that you could live without working. That becomes your critical measure. With your family, I think the critical measure is how many days each year you spend with your family, how many hours each week you spend with your family. I call this FaceTime. You can measure the number of minutes you spend with your family, and that is the critical determinant of the quality of your family life. So decide how you will measure and track success. Now, here's a 7-step goal-setting method. This is a recipe that I share over and over again for with my clients worldwide, and it's very simple. The 7 steps are, number one, decide exactly what you want. Now, this is very hard for most people, but this puts you into the top 10%. Be very specific about what you want. Don't just say, I want to make more money or be thinner or happier or healthier or have a bigger home. Those aren't goals. Those are fantasies. Those are wishes. Everybody has wishes, but only successful people have clear, specific goals. So be specific. How much do you want to earn? How much do you want to be worth? How much do you want to achieve 5 years from now, and so on? Second of all, write it down. A goal that is not in writing is not a written goal at all. It's not a real goal at all. It's what I call a cigarette smoke goal. As you know, you blow out cigarette smoke and it just kind of disappears in the air. So it has no energy behind it. It has no power. So write it down. We know that only 3% of adults have written goals. And the 3% of adults who have written goals, according to Yale, according to Harvard, according to independent studies, earn on average 10 times as much as people without written goals, even with the same education and in the same industry. I meet people every day. I just got back from Macon, Georgia yesterday. I spoke to 1,500 people. And people come up to me at the break and they say, you know, I used that goal-setting formula that you said, and I was really skeptical about it, but I tripled my income in the last 6 months. I met a guy in the Atlanta airport. He increased his income 5 times since he started writing down his goals and working on them every day. So writing down your goals is fabulously powerful. The third part of the recipe is to set a deadline. Your subconscious mind loves a deadline, loves a target to aim at, like a guided missile loves a target to shoot toward. Your subconscious mind loves a deadline. So whenever you set a goal, always say, I earn this amount of money by, and then you put in a date, by December 31st, 2008. You put in the date that you want to earn it by, and your subconscious mind says, ah, that's great, and it goes to work to drive you toward that date, and it gives you ideas 24 hours a day and motivates you to move toward achieving the goal by that date. If you just say, well, I want to lose weight, it has no impact. But if you say, I want to lose this number of pounds by this particular time, then wow. Number four is make a list. Make a list of everything that you could think of that you could possibly do to achieve the goal. Now, here's an important point. When you start off setting goals, you'll be very skeptical about yourself. You'll be kind of, well, I've tried it in the past. It hasn't worked in the past. So we become our own worst enemies. But you can actually dissolve your skepticism about yourself by writing down a list of everything you can think of that you could do. I could do this, and I could do that. And I could start doing this, and I could stop doing that, and I could do more of this and less of that, and I could learn this, and I could learn that. When you begin to write down all the things you could do to achieve the goal, something wonderful happens. You start to say, hey, I could do this. I could do this. Henry Ford once said the biggest goal can be attained if you break it down into enough small pieces. And so when you start to break your goal down into small pieces, you say, oh, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this. And surprise, surprise, as you begin working on these little things on your list, you start to develop momentum. You start to move toward the goal. You start to feel more powerful and more confident. You start to feel happier. You start to get positive feedback. And you become more and more confident. You become more and more determined. And pretty soon you develop this unshakable persistence that makes your goal an inevitability. Then organize the list. Number five, organize the list by two ways, by priority, what is most important, and by sequence. What do you need to do first? Now, these are different. Somebody says, well, aren't they the same? No. The first sequence may be to make a plan, to write down a list and organize it by details so that you know the first step. Priority may be the most valuable thing you can do on that list is this one thing. It could be more important than anything else. So organize the list, and a list organized by priority and sequence, is a plan. Now you have a goal and a plan. A person with a goal and a plan is going to run circles around a genius without it. Step number 6 is take action on your plan. Take action on your most important task. Do something. Do anything, but become action-oriented. Do it now. Do it right away. It's so important that when you finish this exercise, immediately get up and do something. Pick up the phone. Take an action. In other words, put the ball into play. Get the kickoff going in the Super Bowl. Get the game going. Because many people will actually get to this point and they'll say, well, that's really good. And right now I need a vacation. And so I'm going to take a couple of days off at a wonderful place called Someday Isle. And so they go to this wonderful fantasy place called Someday Isle. And someday I'll lose that weight. And someday I'll make that call. And someday I'll read that book. And someday I'll take that program. Or someday I'll. And 80% of the population fails in life because they live on Someday Isle most of the time. Your job is to vote yourself off the island. And finally, number 7 is do something every day on your major goal. And this is really the kicker that guarantees great success in life. If you will do something every single day on your major goal, you'll develop this momentum that will start you going and keep you going day after day. Every single day when you get up in the morning, think about the goal. When you go through the day, think about the goal. In the evening, review the goal and do something 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And you'll be astonished. So here's the exercise I'm going to ask you to do after you finish listening. And it's very simple. You take a clean sheet of paper, and at the top of the paper, you write the word goals plus today's date. And then you make a list of 10 goals that you'd like to accomplish in the next year. And this is a wonderful exercise to do at this time of the year, is write a list of 10 goals and write them in the present tense as though they were already a fact, as though you've already achieved them. So you don't say, I will earn. You say, I earn X number of dollars by December 31st, 2008. Not I will lose weight, but I weigh X number of pounds by March 30th, 2008. Not I will quit smoking, but I am a non-smoker by December 31st, 2007. Whatever it happens to be, set a goal and say it in the present tense. What this does, by the way, is it creates what is called a cognitive dissonance within your brain. It creates a stress between where you are today and where you have told your brain you are. And your brain then works, your subconscious mind works 24 hours a day to relieve this stress, this division, this dissonance between your new command and your existing situation. And it resolves this dissonance by giving you a continuous stream of ideas and things that you can do to make your new command your new reality. You don't have to understand how it works. I could spend a whole day explaining it. All you have to do is start stating things the way you want them to be sometime in the future. Now, once you've made this list of 10 goals, you go over this list with your magic wand again, and you ask yourself this question. If I could achieve any one of these goals within 24 hours, which one goal would have the greatest positive impact on my life? This is one of the greatest questions in the world. This is the question that tells you the direction of your life. If I could achieve any one goal on this list, which one goal would have the greatest positive impact on my life? And whatever it is, put a circle around that goal, and that becomes your major goal. This becomes your focal point. And then you convert it to a new clean sheet of paper, and you write it down in the present tense as though it were a reality, and you set a deadline for when you achieve it. And then you make a list of everything you can do to accomplish it, and then you organize the list by sequence and priority, and then you take action on your list, and then you do something every day on that list. And every single morning you think about the goal, and all day long you think about the goal. And the only question you ask is how. How can I achieve the goal? Not whether, not I'll give it a try, I'll work at it for a while, I'll do my best, we'll see what happens. No, that's what weaklings and pukes and failures do. They're always giving themselves a way out. But what you say is, no, this is my goal. If I achieve this, it'd have the greatest positive impact on my life, and by gum, I am going to work on it until I achieve it. Whether it takes me a week, a month, a year, or even longer, I am going to work on it until I achieve it. Now, here's what's going to happen to you. Is if you set a big goal for yourself, a big, exciting, run and go to the bathroom goal, if you know what I mean. You set that goal for yourself, and then you stay at it, and you persist and persist and persist until you finally achieve it, and you accomplish it, you'll become a different person. For the rest of your life, you'll become a different person. In Gail Sheehy's book, Passages, she talks about pathfinders. the men and women who are the great leaders of society, and she interviewed hundreds of them. She found that they all had one quality in common. They had all set a big goal and committed themselves totally to achieving it and stayed at it until they did. And they experienced every failure and setback and every problem and difficulty you could imagine, but they never quit till they achieved that goal. And afterwards, they were different for the rest of their lives. So remember, you're not achieving the goal for the sake of the goal itself. You're achieving the goal for the sake of the kind of person that you will become as a result of achieving one big goal. Because after that, you'll set more goals and bigger goals and different goals and goals in every area of your life. And you will be so confident in your ability to achieve them, you will become like a force of nature. You will become unstoppable. So that's the first thing, clarity with regard to who you are, what you want, where you're going, and think on paper. The second C is competence. And competence means that you must decide to become very good at the most important things that you do. You must decide to be in the top 10%. You must commit to excellence in your field. Now, when I first heard this, that this is the key to success, I was kind of disappointed because I'd never been successful at anything. I had been fired from laboring jobs. I lived in my car. I had missed meals. I had been broke and had to, you know, borrow with my, you know, wringing my hands from people just to get by. And now I hear that in order to be a big success, I've got to be the best in my field. I've got to be in the top 10%. And then I learned something that changed my life. And what I learned was this, is that everybody in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. Everybody who's doing well today was once doing poorly. Everybody who's at the top of your field was at once at the bottom of your field and didn't even know that the field existed. And whatever else, whatever hundreds of thousands and millions of other people have done, you can do as well, because nobody's smarter than you, nobody's better than you. What they did is they just learned how. Now, here's a wonderful insight. All business skills are learnable. All sales skills are learnable. All negotiation skills are learnable. All business building, growth building skills are learnable. All money-making skills are learnable. Everyone who knows the skills now at one time didn't know them. It's like a doctor at one time didn't know how to put on a Band-Aid, and now they can do surgery. They learned the skill. And you can learn any skill you need to learn to be excellent in any field you need to be excellent in. So here are the keys to competence. Number one is to identify your natural talents and abilities. What are your natural talents and abilities? Every person comes into this world with special talents that make you unique, different, special from anybody else who ever lived. And one of your great goals in life, one of your great responsibilities, is to figure out what they are. What is it that you enjoy doing? What is it that you have a natural flair for? What do you like to talk about and think about? What kind of people do you admire and what do they do? Imagine you had $20 million and you had to choose a job to do for the rest of your life, and you could be given any job at all and do it well. Which one would you pick? And that will often tell you where your area of natural talents are. Second of all, determine the key result areas of your work. In every job, there's 5 to 7 key result areas. In sales, for example, there's prospecting, building rapport, identifying needs, presenting, answering objections, closing the sale, and getting resales and referrals. In management, for example, there's planning, organizing, recruiting right people, delegating, supervising, measuring, and reporting to other people. In other words, in every field, there's 7 key skills. And your job is to figure out what are the 7 key result areas, the areas where I absolutely, positively have to get results in my field, and then give yourself a grade of 1 to 10 in each area. I had a gentleman come to me. He hired me to speak for his group. And he's worth about $25 million. He said, when he first came across my material, he was broke. He'd been in sales for 6 months and hadn't made a sale. He was living at his mother-in-law's house in the basement. And he learned the law of cause and effect. And he said, well, he knew the effect that he wanted, which was success in sales. And he knew he wasn't getting it, so he began to track it back to the causes. And he took each of the 7 parts of selling, and he gave himself a grade in each area, and he realized that he was falling down in some of those areas. So he began to work at prospecting, and he became very, very good at prospecting, separating prospects from suspects. Then he really worked at establishing rapport with customers so that they liked him and trusted him and wanted to do business with him. Then he really focused on questioning how to identify their needs accurately so that he could help them the most. And then he focused on his presentation, and he focused on answering objections, and he focused on closing. and then he focused on getting resales and referrals. 6 months later, he was the top in his branch. 2 years later, he was the top in the country for his company. 5 years later, he was the number one in the country in earnings. His income went up something like 100 times because he broke it down into the critical skills and then began to work on those skills. Number three in developing confidence is to set standards of performance for each key result area. Now, just put a number. How do you measure how well you're doing in each number? I had a guy come to my course, and 6 months later, he showed up at the same course, 170 miles away. And he said, I was at your course 6 months ago. And I said, well, that's a great compliment. I said, you live around here? He said, no. He said, I just heard you were doing the program again on sales, so I came back. I said, why? He said, well, I never bought an audio program before in my life. He said, but at your program, I decided I would buy that program on closing sales because that was my biggest weakness in selling. And my sales in the last 6 months have gone from 1 in 10 to 5 in 10. He said, my income's gone up 400%. He said, I've never made so much money my whole life. He said, just by learning closing techniques. I said, that's phenomenal. Well, 6 months later, I was giving the same course in another city, and I started to tell his story, and he stood up and he said, that's me. He was back again. I said, how are you? His name is Keith. I said, how are you doing, Keith? He said, fine. I said, am I telling the story correctly? He said, well, not exactly. He said, my closing rate now is 9 out of 10. He said, I close 9 out of 10 people I speak to. He said, I close half of them in the prospecting call on the phone. He said, I used to have to call, make appointments, go out, see people, call them back, and so on. He said, now, he said, because I've worked so hard on closing, I can identify their needs accurately. I can qualify them. I can present effectively on the phone. I can actually close and get the order on the phone 5 out of 10 times. He said, my income's up almost 10 times in less than a year. It's unbelievable what you can do if you have the critical techniques, and they're all learnable techniques. So point number four is select your weakest skill. Ask yourself, what is my weakest key skill? Because this is what we've learned. Your weakest key skill sets the height of your income. Let me repeat that. Because you could be good at everything you do but one thing, and your weakest essential skill sets the height of your income. You could be great at everything but prospecting. You could be great at everything but closing. You could be great at everything except getting referrals, and that determines your income. So here's the question, and this is one of the greatest questions you'll ever learn. This is a life-changing question. What one skill? Imagine you had a magic wand, and you could wave it. What one skill, if you were absolutely excellent at it, would help you the most to double your income? What one skill? Imagine you could take a pill, a magic pill, or you could wave a magic wand, and poof, and overnight, you'd be outstanding at that particular skill. Like this gentleman who became outstanding at closing sales. They called him the closing machine in his company. The closing machine is whenever he got on the phone, people would rush and say, hey, Keith's on the phone, Keith's on the phone. They all rush, and they just stand around his desk taking notes while he spoke on the phone. He was the closing machine. And a year before, he was having the same problems with closing as everybody else has. So what one skill, if you're absolutely excellent at it, would help you the most? And whatever your answer is to that, write it at the top of the page as a goal in the present tense. You write, I am absolutely excellent at this skill. And then set a deadline. Give yourself 6 to 12 months. Don't expect to be excellent overnight. And give yourself a deadline, and then make a list of everything you can possibly do to develop the skill. Read this, learn this, try this, listen to that, and so on. And then organize it by priority and sequence. What should you do first? What should you do second? Who should you talk to? What should you read? And so on. And then take action and then do something every day to upgrade your ability in that area. And my promise to you is a week, a month, a year from now, you're going to be the closing machine. You're going to be the person that people refer to. If you want to see how it's done, go to him, go to her. And you're going to say, a year ago, I couldn't do this. And now I'm so good that people are taking notes and following me around. Why? It's because all business skills are learnable. You can learn any business skill you need to learn. If I told you, you're going to have to learn how to touch type within 1 year, you'd say, oh, all right. It's a skill. You know you can do it because millions of people can do it. All you do is get a typing course, practice 30 minutes a day for 3 months, and you'd be typing 50, 80 words a minute. If I told you you need to ride a bicycle, learn to ride a motorcycle, learn to skydive, any of these things, they're just skills. You say, okay, I'll learn that skill. Yet if you learn the one skill that can help you the most, that can double your income. That can cut 5 to 10 years off your working life. That can get you to the same level of income in 12 months that you might get in 12 years. It's the most amazing darn thing, and people miss it. And once you have mastered this skill, which you will do, something will happen to you, and you'll never be the same again. You'll say, hey, I can do this. I can do this. And then you'll say, now what one skill will help me the most? Now what one skill will help me the most? And by gum, you write that down as a goal. And for the rest of your life, you keep developing the critical skill, the one skill that can help you more than anything else. And it can transform your entire life. So developing confidence, deciding to be in the top 10%, is absolutely essential. There are no successful people who are not good at what they do. And everyone started off without those skills. Everyone learned those skills through practice. Now, the third C is called constraints. And constraints is one of the most powerful thinking tools you'll ever learn. It's because between where you are and where you want to go, your goal, there's always a constraint, what we call the limiting factor that determines how quickly you achieve your goal. So always ask, what determines the speed at which you double your income? What determines the speed at which you double your income? For example, the simple answer, if you're in business, you say, well, the speed is the number of people I speak to. Okay, that may be the answer. What else determines the speed? Well, maybe it's the quality of the people I speak to. Well, that's a very different answer that requires a different approach. Maybe it's the quality of my sales presentation. Ooh, that's a different. Maybe it's the quality of the way I show my product. Maybe it's the quality of my closing. Maybe it's the quality of my credibility, how many referrals I get. I've worked with people who have increased their income 3 to 5 times simply by becoming referral-generating machines. Everything they do all day long is to look for ways to generate referrals, to piggyback on the credibility of other people, to form joint ventures, strategic alliances, to help other salespeople sell to their customers, and then they sell to theirs. In other words, sometimes a single constraint that's holding you back, if you can alleviate that constraint, can change your life. So, what is holding you back? What sets the speed at which you achieve your most important goal? What is holding you back? And here's the great question. Ask yourself, why aren't you at your goal already? Why haven't you already achieved your goal? If your goal is to double your income, it's a good goal, why haven't you already doubled your income? Why aren't you already earning twice as much? Now, when you ask that question, the first thing that will pop into your mind is your favorite excuses. Well, it's because of this, and it's because of that, it's because of this. But I'm going to suggest to you that none of your excuses are valid. You say, well, it's because of the market. You say, oh, it's the market and the competition. Well, is there anyone else working in this market, selling this product, that's earning twice as much as you? If there is, your excuse is invalid. It has no basis in reality. So you say, well, it's my age. Is there anyone your age who's earning twice as much? Well, it's my sex, my color, my education. Is there anyone with the same limitation who's earning twice as much? And if you're honest, you'll have to say, yes, it's countless people with every limitation I could dream of who are earning twice as much as me. So none of your excuses are valid. So what you have to do is go back to the drawing board and realize. So what we do is we say apply the 80-20 rule to constraints. Now, the 80-20 rule says that 80% of the reasons that you're not achieving your goals today are inside yourself. They are the lack of a skill, lack of a quality. Just like the story I told you at the beginning, the woman was working very, very hard, but she had poor time management skills. So she just decided to become excellent at time management. And she tripled her income in 90 days. I worked with another man whose wife bought him How to Master Your Time, which is coming to you after this program. He listened to it the first week of every month for 24 months. His income went from average to number one in the world out of 11,000 salespeople. His income increased 700%. He went from rags to riches. He went from average house to an expensive home in the best part of town, new cars for he and his wife, kids in private schools, and taking beautiful vacations in Europe and the South Seas within 24 months. He did not change his sales skills. He just changed his time management skills. That was his constraint. He just recognized, as his wife recognized, honey, your time is out of control. You're just not managing your time right. He said it was absolutely astonishing. He's working the same 8 hours a day, and he's making 7 times as much. Now, I'm not saying that everybody can do that, but you could certainly double and triple your productivity. I mean, that's no problem at all. You could probably do that next week. So whatever your major internal constraint is, remember 80% of the things holding you back, lack of self-discipline perhaps, lack of time management, lack of planning, whatever's holding you back, focus on alleviating that one main constraint. Focus on developing the one skill. Focus on developing the one quality that you require. Overcome the one weakness that may be holding you back. So ask yourself, if you could wave a magic wand, how would you change or improve your situation today? What one constraint would you get out of your way if you could just wave a magic wand and go poof, and it would be gone completely. Now, the fourth C in doubling your productivity, doubling your time off, doubling your income, is creativity. And the rule is, based on years and years of experience, is that you are a potential genius. 95% of the people, according to Howard Gardner at Harvard University and in his work on what is called multiple intelligences, 95% of the population have the ability to function at genius levels in their special area of intelligence. And sometimes average people, even below average people, have a genius in some areas. They have a genius in mechanical skills, a genius in woodworking skills. They have a genius. And your job is to ask, what is your area of potential genius? Because you have the ability to function at exceptional levels if you can find it. Now, we can go into this and spend days at it, which I do, but let's take it down. Let's talk about creativity in terms of problem solving. You see, in life, what holds you back from achieving anything you want in life are merely obstacles. We say that a goal unachieved is merely a problem unsolved. So you want to double your income? It's just merely a problem you have to solve. Why aren't you already earning twice as much? And so you use your creativity to solve any problem, overcome any obstacle, achieve any goal. And remember, you're a genius. The number of ways that you can come up with to solve your problems and achieve your goals are literally beyond imagination. The starting point of solving any problem or difficulty is to define the problem or obstacle clearly. Say, what is the problem? What is the obstacle? What is the barrier? What's holding me back here? What is the problem we're dealing with as a business, as a family, and so on? And write it down. Write it down. You have the most amazing thing. I do this with my staff. We say we have a problem. Let's write it down. And we'll spend half an hour debating over the exact definition of the problem. Somebody says, no, that's not the problem. The problem isn't our sales are down. The problem is we're not closing enough. No, the problem is not we're not closing enough. We're not attracting enough qualified prospects. No, the problem is not qualified prospects. It's our payment plan. And so the first thing you do is be really clear about what the problem is, and then you ask the magic question, what else is the problem? What else is the problem? You see, beware of a problem for which there's only one definition. If you only define a problem one way, then what happens is you are very limited in your ability to use your creativity to solve it. When we work with companies, we say, what is your biggest problem? Well, we want to increase our sales. So I say the problem is low sales. Okay, I say, what else is the problem? Well, we're not making enough sales. Okay, what else is the problem? Well, we're not attracting enough prospects. Well, what else is the problem? Well, we're not attracting enough qualified prospects. What else is the problem? Well, we're not closing enough of the prospects that we attract. Well, what else is the problem? Well, we don't have enough good salespeople. What else is the problem? Well, we don't do any sales training. Well, what else is the problem? Well, our customers are buying too much from our competitors. Well, what else is the problem? Well, our competitor salespeople are better trained than ours are. What else is the problem? Well, their advertising is better. What else is the problem? Our products are not perceived to be as good as those of our competitors. And you keep asking these questions, and every answer leads to a whole different range of solutions. So therefore, one of the marks of creativity is to expand your definition of the problem. Now, second of all, you ask, what are all the possible solutions? What's the solution here? The greatest weakness of people that limits their thinking ability is they jump to a conclusion. They say, well, the best solution is this. And they say, okay, let's do that. No, no, no. Then you say, well, what else is the solution? And what else is the solution? And what else could we do more of, less of, start or stop? What kind of information do we need? Is it really a problem? Do we need to solve it today? Do we need to solve it personally? What if we just left it and did nothing? Sometimes the solution is to do nothing at all. In other words, keep looking for all the possible solutions and beware of a problem for which there only appears to be one solution. That's a very dangerous problem because it puts you in a box. And then once you have all these solutions, the correct solution seems to bubble to the top like cream rises to the top of milk and make a decision. Select a solution. 80% of all problems should be solved at this stage. Only 20% should be delayed upon. Any solution is usually better than no solution at all. And I was just reading the works of George C. Patton, the World War II battle commander. And he said, an average solution vigorously pursued is better than a superior solution pursued with weakness or indecision. He said, a poor decision pursued immediately is often better than an excellent decision that is pursued later. So make a decision and then take action. Set a deadline on your solution. When are you going to measure what has happened? Determine how you will measure success, and then take action immediately. Get on with the solution. Remember, any solution is better than none. The fifth C in doubling your productivity is concentration. And concentration is my favorite of all. I believe that focus, clarity, and concentration are the keys to great success. And concentration means your ability to focus single-mindedly on one thing at a time. This is the hardest of all skills to develop. It is the critical constraint that holds most people back. They try to do too many things, they do nothing completely, and they don't do important things. So you know the old saying that proper prior planning prevents poor performance. It's called the 6P formula. Proper prior planning prevents poor performance. So in order to double your productivity, start each day with a list of activities. Think on paper. Write it down. According to time management experts, you'll increase your productivity by 25% the first day you start working from a list. And when something new comes up, write it down before you begin on it. You need to phone somebody, write it down. You need to check on something, write it down. Keep an ongoing list on front of you and keep ticking them off as you track it. Now, number three is set priorities on your list. Use the 80-20 rule. Remember that 20% of what you do accounts for 80% of the value. So go down and look at the list and say, what's the most important thing that I can do on this list? What's number one? What's number two? What's number three? Organize your list by priority. Ask yourself, if I could only do one thing on this list before I was called out of town for a month, what one thing would I be sure to get done? And whatever that is, that's the first thing you begin on. The rule is, do the worst first. Do the biggest, ugliest thing first and get it over with. Now, ask yourself this question, number four. What are your highest value tasks? Remember two of the things on your list. If you have 10 items to do on your list, two of those will be worth more than all the others put together. Avoid the natural tendency to major in minors. Avoid the tendency to work on and start on small things first. Discipline yourself to start on your biggest task and do that before anything else. Number five, and this is one of the greatest questions in concentration and high performance. What can you and only you do that, if done well, will make a real difference? What can you and only you do that, if done well, will make a real difference? Whatever your answer is to this question, start on that one thing and do it immediately. This is something that if you don't do it, nobody else will do it. But if you do do it and you do do it well, it can make an enormous difference in your life. Whatever it is, write it down, make a plan, and get on with it. Question number six, why are you on the payroll? Why are you on the payroll? If your son or daughter were to ask you, Mommy, Daddy, why do they pay you money at your job? What would your answer be? Well, they pay me money because I do this. I accomplish this result. I make this contribution. One of the most valuable words that you'll learn and use for the rest of your life is the word contribution. Don't think in terms of activities or results or accomplishments. Think of contribution. What contribution have you been hired to make? Of all the contributions you make, what are the most important contributions? And here is something that we have discovered, and I call it the law of three. The law of three says that if you make a list of everything you do at your job in a week or a month, and you review the list, you'll find that there are only three activities on that list that account for 90% of all the value that you contribute to your company. Only three items. And how do you identify these items? Well, in our coaching programs, we help people make out a list, and then we have them ask this question. Look at this list of things that you do in your work and ask yourself, if I could only do one thing all day long, which one activity contributes the most value to my company? And put a circle around that. Usually jumps out at you. Then ask yourself, if I could only do two things all day long, what would be number two? And if I could only do three things all day long, what would be number three? And it's amazing. You look at those three and you'll be amazed. You'll say, geez, those three account for 90% of all the value you contribute. And everything else is a warm-up, a warm-down, a support task, a complementary task, often something that can be delegated, downsized, outsourced, simplified, even eliminated to do those big three. And I've had people who've identified those three and then disciplined themselves to only do those three. And they've got their secretary to answer their email, and they've got someone else to do the printing, and they've got an outside company to do the payroll, and they just do those three all day long. And their income doubles and doubles again and doubles again. We've had people who've tripled their income, quadrupled their income in as little as a few months, sometimes a year, after working for 20 years in the same field. They could not believe it. And they're taking more time off with their family. So what are your big three? What are the three most important things you do? By the way, if you work for a boss, make a list of everything you do and take your list to your boss and tell your boss that you'd like to be working on the most important things from his point of view and ask him to put priorities on the list. What's the number one thing that I do here? Number one result I get or contribution I make in your estimation? What's number two? What's number three? And whatever your boss tells you or what he thinks are number one, two, and three, that's what you work on all day long. If you have staff members who report to you, have them make a list and bring it to you, and you discuss the list with them and tell them, this is number one, this is number two, this is number three. Nothing makes people happier in the whole world than to know that they're working on the most important thing they could possibly be doing. And finally, the last question in concentration is, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? Every minute of every day, you should be asking, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? And whatever the answer is to that, that's what you work on. And you must discipline yourself to keep working. When you're talking to your staff or your coworkers, you say, hey, is that the most valuable use of your time right now? Hey, is that the most valuable use of your time right now? And just tease them. And it's the most amazing darn thing. They say, whoops, whoops, and get back to what is hard and important rather than what is fun and unnecessary. Now, the sixth C, and we're getting to the end of our program, the sixth C is courage. And courage is really the critical determinant. Winston Churchill said, courage is rightly considered the foremost of the virtues, for upon it all others depend. Margaret Thatcher once says that all virtues come down to courage at the sticking point. So courage means being willing to move out of your comfort zone. Courage means willing to try something different that you've never tried before. You know the rule that to become someone you've never been before, you must learn something you've never learned before. You must try something you've never tried before. You must become a different person than you've ever been before. So if you want to do something different, you have to be someone different. So dream big dreams. Ask yourself, if other people can have wonderful lives, make fabulous livings, take beautiful vacations, why not you? When my wife and I were starting off and we had very little money, we used to buy magazines like Wealth and Architectural Digest that shows the homes of the wealthy people. And we'd buy Better Homes and Gardens with those beautiful houses and interior furnishings. And we'd buy magazines that show fabulous cars and great resorts and vacations. We asked the question, you know, why not us? Why not us? And then the question we asked was how? How could we earn enough money so that we could afford to do these things? It's the most amazing question. You start to think, well, we do more of this and less of that, and more of this and less than that. Now, here's a great exercise. Whatever your goal is financially, is add an additional zero to it. If your goal is to earn $5,000 a month, add a zero. Make it $50,000 a month. If your goal is to make $50,000 a year, add a zero. Make it $500,000 a year. The first time you do this, you'll go into sort of a state of shock. Your mind will reject it. It'll kick it back out again. No, it won't work. But just keep thinking about it. Keep turning it over in your mind. Just imagine that it is somehow possible for you to earn 10 times as much as you're earning today. What would you have to do to contribute enough value to be worth 10 times as much? And you start thinking about that. And you start turning it around in your mind. You start thinking, well, I could do this, or I could do that. I could do more of this and more of that. I could learn this new skill. I could take this new risk. I could try this new venture. And surprise, surprise, you'll start to think of ways to make it possible. Now, the great thing that holds us back in life is the fear of failure. And the way that you resolve the fear of failure is you do the thing you fear. And how do you overcome the fear of failure? There's a very simple technique. Just say to yourself over and over again, whenever you're afraid, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. And each time you say, I can do it, your fears go down and your courage goes up. And you just say, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it, I can do anything, I can do anything. Interestingly enough, everybody's afraid. As Patton says, that a hero is just a coward who's brave 5 minutes longer than the average person. Because everybody's afraid. And Patton says, you never met a man going into battle who wasn't afraid. Never met a man trying something new, taking on a new challenge, who wasn't afraid at the beginning. And that's true. You and I are always afraid. The only question is, how do we handle the fear? Do we let the fear overwhelm us, or do we face it square on and deal with the fear? And so what you do is, the wonderful thing is, anything you do repeatedly over and over again becomes a habit. And if you develop the habit of confronting your fear, doing the thing you're afraid of, then eventually the fear goes away. Just like that cigarette smoke I talked about before, it just kind of disappears. And you wake up in the morning and you say, well, I'm not afraid of cold calling. I'm not afraid of rejection. I'm not afraid of failing. Failure is the price you pay for success. One of the great lines I read many years ago, and I never forgot it, was a grandfather giving advice to his grandson, and his grandson was talking about his fears, and his grandfather said, son, he said, act boldly, and unseen forces will come to your aid. Act boldly, and unseen forces will come to your aid. And it's like a miracle of the universe. Whenever you act boldly in the direction of a big goal, all kinds of incredible things start to happen for you. Act boldly. And Dorothea Brand was once asked, what is the key to success? And she was told, the great authoress, she said, act as if it were impossible to fail, and it shall be. And you know, she gave lectures based on that for the rest of her career. She wrote books based on that concept. She said the turning point in her life, when someone told her, she said, if you were a big success, how would you act? Well, I would do this and I would do that. Well, act as if you already are. Pretend as if you're already a great success. Fake it until you make it. And so she did. She acted as if she was a big success, and pretty soon she began to succeed at a higher level than she ever imagined possible. Thomas J. Watson was once asked by a young journalist, he was asked, Mr. Watson, how could I be more successful? He said, I've been working hard for years and I haven't broken through. And he said, if you want to be more successful, he said, you must double your rate of failure. He said, success lies on the far side of failure. As you know, Thomas J. Watson Sr. was the founder of IBM, a self-made man, started with nothing but the ability to sell and built one of the greatest companies in the world. And his basic philosophy was always this, double your rate of failure. Success lies on the far side of failure. So courage is really, really important. Each time you make a mistake, you ask two questions. What did I do right? And what would I do differently next time? Failure is merely an opportunity to more intelligently begin again. Every failure teaches you lessons that ultimately guarantee your success. So whenever you have a temporary failure, say, ha, well, it goes with the territory. What did I do right? And think about everything you did right. And what would I do differently next time? And then take the next step. Finally, the last C to doubling your income, doubling your time off, is closure. Closure. Important task completion is a major source of energy, enthusiasm, and success. It's the greatest problems we have in life are lack of closure. We take a task all the way to 80 or 90%, and then we take a trip to the island, and someday I'll finish that up. So with regard to closure, completion, number one, decide upon your goal or task. Write it down. Make a plan. Set priorities in every area of your life. Determine what's more important, what's less important. Remember, doing one thing can often be more important than everything else you have to do. Number three is start immediately on your major task. Do the worst first. Discipline yourself to start on your biggest task rather than putting it off and spending time on little tasks. Number four, concentrate single-mindedly on completing one thing, the most important thing. Interestingly enough, I've learned that whenever you complete a task, you get a rush of endorphins. You feel happier. You feel elated. You have more energy. You feel more creative and more positive, and you feel more eager to do something else. So if you're going to get this rush of endorphins, the very best time is first thing in the morning. So you can literally double your productivity with this one technique, is make a list the night before of everything you have to do the following day, organize the list by priority, and pick your most important task, your biggest, ugliest task, and get up the next morning and do that. Start on it and complete it. If you will do that, it's be almost like pushing down a dynamite detonator. Boom! Suddenly you feel launched into the whole day. For the rest of the day, you'll be wired. You'll be on your best. You'll be more creative. You'll be more optimistic. You'll be more positive. So concentrate on completing that one thing, and that whole day you'll be twice or three times as productive as if you start off with little things, small things, drinking coffee, chatting with friends, and so on. And if you do this repeatedly every day for a month, by the end of the month, you're going to be one of the highest motivated, most energetic, most productive people in your field. Everybody in your work world is going to think you're smoking something in the morning because you're going to be wired when you come in. Number five, always focus on your most important results. Always ask, what results are expected of me? Out of all the results, what's the most important result I can get? Number six, develop a sense of urgency, a bias for action. Move now. Three of the most powerful words you can learn to be more productive are do it now, do it now, do it now. Three more words you can learn is whenever you start to digress is back to work, back to work, back to work. Talk to yourself in a positive way. Do it now, back to work, back to work. And what this does is this impels you. It's like two hands shoving you from behind into the job and getting you going. And finally, number seven, get going and keep going until the job is done. Discipline yourself to bring the job to completion, because whenever you complete a task, small or large, you get a tremendous payoff. You feel like a winner. Your self-esteem goes up. Your self-respect goes up. Your self-confidence goes up. Your energy levels go up. Your brain releases this feeling of happiness, these endorphins, and you feel impelled to start something new. So the three keys to success are very simple. Decide exactly what you want, number one. Determine the most important result you can get to achieve your most important goal, number two. And number three is take action immediately and never, never quit until you are successful. If you'll do these things, you will double your productivity, double your performance, double your output, double your income, and you'll double your effectiveness in life. You'll double the amount of time that you have to spend with your friends, and you'll double the speed at which you move toward achieving all of your most important goals. Thank you for listening. Now, let's go to the questions and answers, and let me answer any personal questions that anybody has as a result of our talk. Could our moderator please turn them on and take questions? If you have a question, please raise your hand or push your button.
Yes, we'll do. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll conduct a question and answer session. If you'd like to state a question, please press *0 on your phone now. We are now ready to begin. Our first question comes from Daniel. Daniel, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. I'm a service provider. I'm a therapist. And I just want to know, how would you apply the sales ideas that you mentioned? I don't make phone calls to people. So I'm trying to work out how to apply the ideas that you mentioned as a therapist to increase my client number base.
Well,
I'd like to know.
So now what you're asking is a sales question. You're asking a sales question rather than a time management question, Daniel, and that's kind of hard to answer. But again, what you do is you say, what are the three most important keys to business building? The law of three? What are the keys to building your practice? What are the three most important keys? Well, I would guess number one is attracting new patients or clients the first time. Number two, having them so satisfied that they come again. And number three is having them bring their friends because they're so happy. So you ask yourself this question. What can I do to attract new clients? What can I do to please my clients so well that they come again? What can I do to get more referrals from my happy clients? And each of those requires a strategic approach. And you take a piece of paper and you write out a list of every single thing that you could think of that you could do. And then you begin to practice. You begin to apply. Not everything at once, but you try this and you try that and you try this and you try that. And eventually you develop a system. Like all really successful therapists do, they develop a system which keeps their offices full 8 hours a day. But there's no simple solution, as you know, but you have to become focused, absolutely clear about what you want to accomplish, and pick the one area that you need to work on and work on that single-mindedly until you feel that you've mastered it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Daniel. Question.
Our next question comes from John. John, please state your question.
Hello, Brian. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, John?
Good. My question is that when you do your daily goal setting and write out your top 10 goals, are you writing out the answers to your focal points, like I earn X number of dollars, I read X number of minutes, I spend X number of time with my family, I you know, exercise X number of minutes. Is all the goals the actual numbers to the focal points?
Well, when you plan your day, there's two different things. I write down my goals every day in a spiral notebook, and I write them in the present tense, just as you described. But when
conference
I plan
operator?
My pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry.
When I plan my day, what I do is I make a list of everything I have to do that day to achieve those goals, starting from first thing in the morning. What I do is, like, for example, I have my daily list in front of me. My first daily list says 6 a.m. to 7:30 a.m., swim 1 mile in local pool. So I get up at 6 a.m., I take my stuff, I go across the street, I swim 1 mile, I come back, and I'm here by 7:30. My next goal from 8 to 9 is a call with a client. My next goal from 10 a.m. So I write down the times, and then there are many things that don't have time, so you just write them down. And you get your day organized, and then you just start to work your way through your list. But your list of activities is very different from your list of goals. Goals are long-term, strategic. Lists are short-term, tactical activities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Paul. Paul, please state your question.
Hello, Brian. Thanks for all your good input over the years. You've helped me to achieve a lot of my great goals.
Thank you, Paul.
Now I'm in a situation where a lot of my results or the bulk of my results are achieved through folks who work in my group. And so I'm continually improving on my ability to track my tasks and identify the key tasks and stay on them until they're complete, stay focused on them. And I'm working towards having the folks in my group keep a mind as to what their key task is and hold them accountable to achieving it on in a timely fashion, efficiently. But I'm finding that I would like to see them develop faster and be better at identifying their own key tasks and tracking it themselves. I've got like a spreadsheet we put on our network server, and we go through as a group. We get together, okay, here's your task, here's the due date, who owns it, what's the expectation. Do you have tips for helping folks like direct reports in your group improve their time management skills and productivity without being, you know, doing it for them kind of?
Well, one of the things you can do is first of all, don't try to be a teacher. You can be a guide, but you try to be a teacher, it'll just consume you. I mean, you'll just be working all this time and nobody will remember. Is get them to listen to audio programs. I work with a company. I just started working with them. They called me up and said, well, could I speak for them at their annual meeting? And I said, sure. And then I began talking to them. It turned out that these people, I was their almost their god internally, because the guy who started the company, when he first came to my seminar and began writing goals and managing time, he was earning $50,000 a year. Now he earns $50,000 a month. He's built a $120 million business, and he's doing phenomenally well. And I said, that's incredible. He said, we just listen to your audio programs. Everybody in our company is required to listen to your audio programs or we fire them. And we review them, we check them. We say, we listen to this program, and then we say, okay, now repeat back what you learned in this program. And they are absolutely adamant. Nobody gets promoted. Nobody gets to stay on if they don't listen to audio programs, specific audio programs on sales and time management. And he said it's enabled them. They go through quite a few people, but it's enabled them to build a core group of fabulous performers. And so what I would suggest you do is don't try to be a teacher. Is just insist that people be self-directed in their learning, and then continually check on them, continually have them repeat back to you what they've learned. And tell them that you're going to check. This is absolutely essential. You cannot succeed in this business unless you continually upgrade your skills in these areas, and then insist that they do it. And if people aren't willing to do it, then you're just wasting your time with them. You'll just be tearing your hair out with them for month after month and year after year. And they'll finally leave anyway, and you'll have wasted all the time that you spent. The only type of people that I have found who have any future at all are people who are totally committed to their own self-development. So if they're not committed to their own self-development, then encourage them to go and waste somebody else's life.
Is there anybody's audio programs who you'd recommend?
Well, that's a great question. What we do, is, as you know, is all our audio programs. My program, Psychology of Selling and How to Master Your Time, have made more salespeople rich than probably any two programs that have ever been put together. What we do is we guarantee them for a year. So you can take the programs and listen to them for an entire year. If you're not happy, you can send them back and there's no charge. So I do recommend them. I recommend them very highly. They're the best-selling and most popular programs in the world in 16 languages. Now, some of them are in as many as 27 languages. So give them a try.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a believer.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Our next question comes from Terry. Terry, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. This is Terry. I really love the work that you do. And I was wondering, what do you suggest in someone when they're doing their visioning work so that they can be very clear and that the goals are exciting and focused? Because sometimes I think in doing that, I come up with a goal and I'm bored after 6 months. So I really want to, you know, kind of sharpen that visioning process so it's something that's going to keep me excited and going for many years to come.
Well, you know, one of the things you can do is just extend the time length of your vision. A six-month vision is almost just basically a goal. Sometimes it's an activity. But a 10-year vision should be worth $10 million and have $100,000 a month in net cash flow coming from your investments. Now, that's really something that can get you wired. And it's much bigger than anything that you're doing today. So what you need to do, Terry, is increase the size of your vision. I have a friend who started off in sales, building a sales company. His goal was to build a hospital in India. He's now built 7 hospitals. But he's built a $50 million company starting from nothing, coming from a farmer's family. He's built a big company. His vision was so big, he needed more money so he could build more hospitals. Now he's got 7 hospitals and hundreds of patients. So he had a huge vision. And he's the same, you know, he's about 45, 48 years old. And people on either side of him are still working for wages. He's got a big business and 7 hospitals because he had a big vision. He didn't want to just send one person a check for medical treatment. He wanted to save, you know, hundreds of people. So you just need a bigger vision.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Terry. Our next question comes from Jerome. Jerome, please state your question.
Good afternoon, Brian. Thank you very kindly for your positive input. Would you please give us your single best technique regarding the following question? How do you get the necessary kick in the rear to start moving from your comfort zone immediately?
Well, it's the hardest thing in the world. I have a book here that was given to me by a man who built a $100 million company from scratch. And the book, the title could be called Resistance. And the whole book is about how you overcome the natural resistance to taking the action that you know you should take. How do you overcome that resistance? And it is the biggest question of all. And the guy spent his whole life working on that because it's there. So what I find is that you overcome procrastination by, first of all, learning how to do it. One of the things that we teach in How to Master Your Time, which you'll receive, is one whole session with something like 17 ways of overcoming procrastination. Maybe one of the very best ways of all is to make a list of every step in the process of what you have to do, the big task, and then take one step. Just do one thing. What I found in life is the big difference between winners and losers is that winners take the first step, and losers always have a reason not to. And so just take the first step. And what you do is you make a list, go over the list, and maybe it's a little step. Sometimes we call this the salami slice method. Is you don't try to eat a loaf of salami in one sitting. You slice off one small slice. Sometimes we call it the Swiss cheese method, where you just punch out one piece, one hole, and you just take that one little piece. And what this often does is it often triggers you into the next step. And each time you complete a step, even a little step, you get a little jolt of endorphin. And the little jolt of endorphin is like hands pushing you from behind to kind of push you into the next step. And you get another little jolt. And you complete that step. And very often, you'd be amazed at what you accomplish. People say they want to write a book. They want to write a book. Well, I write 4 books a year, sometimes 5, sometimes 6. I write books faster than publishers can publish them. And they're all published by major worldwide publishers. They're now in 37 languages, 52 countries. And how do you write a book? One page at a time. Why do you write one page at a time? Write one line at a time. So it's quite amazing. If you write, I know a fellow who became a best-selling author working 16 hours a day, he found that if he just stopped watching television, went to bed at 10, he could get up at 5. And if he could just write from 5 to 6, he could write one page. And so what he did is he worked for an entire year, and on the weekends he would edit. He'd write one page each working day, and on the weekends he would edit. Within a year, he'd written a book. And he took it to a publisher, and the publisher published it and became a bestseller, and his career was launched. He said it was quite amazing, just one page a day. Just disciplined himself 5 days a week to get up at 5 a.m. and write one page. So break it down into very small tasks and just do one little bit. And often that's enough to sort of kick you into it. And when you get the program, How to Master Your Time, listen to that from cover to cover 6 times, but especially listen to the ideas on procrastination, because it's the greatest problem we all have. Everybody has it. And you just have to just keep working at it until you develop a habit of not procrastinating.
If I can add just one addendum to that, then that would also be never believe that you are a failure, even if you fail during a single step.
No, absolutely not. You know, remember this, that successful people fail 10 times as often as failures do. Failures fail only a little bit. Failures are so afraid of failing, they don't ever try anything. But successful people try over and over again, and they keep falling on their face. The only question is, what did you learn from it? Every time you have a setback or a difficulty, as they say, failure is never final. It's just merely a learning experience. So you say, well, what did I learn from that? Oh, that hurt. What did I learn? Whew. Okay, won't do that again, and get on with it.
Thank you very kindly for your informed input.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good day.
Conference operator. Oh, our next question comes from Michael. Michael, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. Wonderful telenar. Really enjoyed it. I guess this is a segue from the previous question, from writing books to reading them.
Right.
Clearly, reading and self-study and so on figure prominently in your sort of prescription here for developing yourself. And I was just curious, how much do you read? Are you reading anything good right now in particular? Do you focus on material in your field, or do you also read fiction? And just how do you use reading?
When I was younger, I read a lot of fiction, and over time I stopped reading it because I got so hungry for knowledge. So I read 2 books a week. I read 2 books in the last 3 days, actually. Probably 4 books, 2 larger books, 2 smaller books. Plus, I've read about 10 magazines. I read The Economist. I read The American Spectator, National Review, Weekly Standard. I read Fortune, Forbes, Business Week, Small Business from Fortune. I read a whole bunch of stuff to keep current with what's going on. But I read 2 books a week, two books a week and about 10 magazines. Plus, I read 4 newspapers a day, just briefly, quickly, just to keep current. And what I do is I have a great advantage. When I fly, I read the whole time. I flew to and from Serbia and Macedonia last week, so I had 8 hours of reading, studying. I study languages, French, German, Spanish. I read foreign papers. But I just make reading sort of a natural part of my life. I breathe in, breathe out, and read all the time. Get up in the morning and read. I read for 30 to 60 minutes each morning before I start the day. And during the day, I read. And in the evenings, I read. And when I'm traveling, I read. And when I go on vacation, I read. So it's just, there's a saying that reading is to the mind as exercise is to the body. And all leaders are readers. It's impossible to keep current with your world if you're not reading. Because there's just so many things going on. And you need to be well informed. You need to be a player. The only way you can be a player is you've got to know what's going on. You've got to know different points of view. You've got to know the news. You have to have a sense for what's going on. And so just make it a part of your life. Turn off the television. The most amazing darn thing is that as soon as you turn on the television, it mesmerizes you, and it shuts down all reading. You stop, the whole family stops because the television sort of sucks up all your brain. We call it chewing gum for the eyes. And so just don't turn on the television. One of the great secrets for success in life is leave things off. Leave things off. Don't be obsessed. You see people walking around, and they're on their cell phones, and they're on their iPods, and they got their music on, and they're listening. It's almost like they have to be bombarding their mind with senseless noise 24 hours a day. Just leave things off. Leave things off. Sit quietly. Read a little bit. It's fabulous for your brain. It makes you smart, and it will eventually make you rich.
I like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Our next question comes from Nicholas. Nicholas, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Hi, Nicholas.
I was going to ask you, just talking about reading. I've been reading a little more myself lately. How do you take that knowledge that you get from reading and apply it in your real life and organize it?
Well, what I do is I'm constantly looking for insights. You know, there's never a single thing. I sometimes read a whole book and get one insight.
Got it.
And so you're constantly looking for insights. And what you're doing is you're continually restocking your mental cabinets. And what will happen is as you continue to read, suddenly you'll have an opportunity to learn something, to use something that you've read. And you never know what it will be or when it will be. Sometimes it's very direct.
Right.
You read it and immediately apply it. Other times you're just simply stocking your metal shelves.
Got it.
And just keep at it. Just sort of like breathing in, breathing out, keep adding to your repertoire.
Okay.
I write 4 books a year, and I've now written almost 50 books. 50 books is my goal. I'll hit it by next year.
Wow.
And people say, how can you write so many books? Well, what is quite surprising is I will often sit down, and I will write a 200- or 300-page book without reference to notes. I just sit down, and I'll start. I'll do the outline. I'll do the chapters. I just finished 3 books, which I wrote without reference to any notes at all. I just sat down and wrote the outlines of them. And they're very good books. They're going to be published by major publishers. They have potential. Each of them has potential for bestseller status. They've already been sold overseas for tens of thousands of dollars in advance royalties. And I just wrote them without notes. Why? Because I'm smart? No, I'm not smart. I just continually read and keep storing my metal storehouses. And so then when I want to write, I go to my mental pantry, and I start to take down all this information. And I have a way of writing. If anybody on here wants to write a book, and many people want to write a book, go to my website under free newsletters and download. It says How to Write a Book. And it's the 20 steps for writing a book. And I've given those 20 steps to people who have been blocked, if you like, for long periods of time. And within 3 or 4 months, they've got a book. It's a recipe. Just follow the recipe. It's what I've learned, and I write more books than anybody in the world, more good quality books. Nobody writes 4 books a year. A good writer will write a book every 18 to 24 months if they work full-time. I write 4 books a year, and I run 5 other businesses. But how can you do it? Well, it's right on my website. It's right there. It's free. Just download to How to Write a Book.
And that's
just
amazing.
Follow the formula. You know, follow the yellow brick road.
Great. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from James. James, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. I've been a big fan of yours for, I think, at least 10 or 15 years now, doing a lot of the stuff that you've been suggesting today, turning off the TV at night, getting up an hour earlier. That completely changed my life, allowed me to start a business, been very successful. But not as successful as I'd like to be, and I just wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions about that. Question number one is, you know, I did the goals last year, and I'm coming up on 2008. I earned so much money on January 1st, 2008, and I'd say out of the 10 goals, I think I hit 6 or 7. And it always feels like it's the financial goals where I fall short.
Right.
And in my business, and I wanted to ask you a two-part question. One is, when you fall short on a goal, I tend to beat myself up, and I just wanted you to sort of address that problem because, you know, there's always next year, but then you want that deadline, and so I'm always torn between feeling like, wow, I set this goal for myself, and now I'm beating myself up because I didn't achieve it. But, you know, I see that I got the other 7 goals, so I should be happy about that. So there's that question. And then the part two of the question is, I've identified making phone calls, as the key to my success. I have noticed that when I make phone calls on customers, I have a business where I do a lot of direct mail, and I just found that mailing things was like throwing money down the
yeah, like throwing the mail in the garbage. Yeah, I know.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And when you make a phone call and you talk to somebody, it's phenomenally successful. But I find myself saying, okay, I'm going to make 3 hours of phone calls today. That's the way to double my calls, double my income. I buy into all of that, and yet I sit around and I don't make those phone calls.
Yeah.
So I want you to the two-part question is, what do you do with a goal that you didn't succeed on, and how do you integrate that into the next year? And two, how do I get myself to do that thing that I know that I need to do?
Well, the little thing is I wrote a book. Have you read my book, Eat That Frog?
No.
All right. Well, you've got to read that book because it's a life changer, and it really deals with that. It's called 21 Great Ways to Overcome Procrastination. and get more things done faster. And it's a small book. It's become the best-selling book of its kind in the world. It sold millions of copies. It's in 28 languages and sells all over the world. So you need to read that book, Eat That Frog. And what it does is it shows you 21 different ways to get started, get on with it, determine your key tasks, break them down, set higher priorities, motivate yourself. But it's such a good book. People say it's really life-changing. So rather than me taking the next hour to tell you, just get Eat That Frog and read it. Make that your Christmas present. Read it over the next little while. But the most important thing it says is do the worst first. Just pick the most important thing that you can do, which is making phone calls to clients, and just discipline yourself to sit down and damn well do it. And if you can do that repeatedly, it soon becomes a habit to sit down and do it. And then once you've broken that resistance, you've broken that dam inside yourself, then every morning you get down, you sit down, and you just start. Once you've made the first call, you're okay for the rest of the day. It's just disciplining yourself to make that first call.
And then the goals achieved, you know, the goals set but not achieved.
Yeah, well, then what you realize is in Ecclesiastes, it says in the Bible, it says there is a time for every purpose under heaven. And whether you believe in God or not, there's a wonderful little book on prayer, and it says that God always answers prayer, and sometimes he says not yet, because the goal is too big for you and you're not ready for it. Sometimes he says yes, sometimes he says no, sometimes he says not yet, and sometimes he says yes and even more. And so sometimes we set a goal for ourselves, and if we're to achieve that goal, it would be too soon for us. And in retrospect, we look back, we say, I would like to have achieved the goal, but if I had, it might have been too much too soon. You know that 80% of people, I just read this yesterday, my eclectic reading, 80% of people who win the lotteries are broke within 3 years and wish they'd never run the money in the first place because they got the money too soon. They weren't able to handle it, and it destroyed their lives. Many of them committed suicide, got divorced. It was just life-destroying because they weren't ready for the money. And so sometimes we set really big financial goals for ourselves, but God says, well, not yet. Keep persisting, keep persisting, keep working. The other thing is, what I have found is that your income on the outside is determined by your level of preparation and work on the inside. And so if you're not earning as much on the outside as you want, it means you have to go to work on yourself on the inside. He says, maybe you're just not skilled enough. Maybe we just need to develop more skills at a higher level. Maybe we have to become better. You know, the old saying, your life only gets better when you do. Maybe I have to get better in my particular field of skill. And so that then makes you responsible, but it puts you back in charge of your life. It's the 80%. What is it in me that is setting the speed that determines how fast I achieve my goal? And then you go back to work on yourself.
Thank you very much, Brian.
You have a great year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, two more questions.
Okay, great. Our next question comes from Rima. Rima, please state your question.
Thank you for the opportunity. I did read Eat That Frog, and it was life-changing for me a couple of years ago. It was really, really gave me very good insights into where to go and why I'm not there yet. And I also went on to read a number of your other books. Goals is one of them, and I did manage to set up one major goal that I needed to do financially, and I was very happy to achieve it by Thanksgiving this year. It took me, I was dragging with it for years before, and then in 7 months, when I did exactly what you advised, I was able to achieve it. And I'm very happy about that. But my problem, my struggle is with, you know, those four areas of your life. You want them all to be on track, and it takes time to manage your time. I mean, it takes time to sit down and write goals and set priorities and identify constraints and, you know your areas of weakness and where you should improve stuff and stuff like this. So is there something you would recommend? I know you do one-on-one coaching, which may not be affordable for a lot of us, but is there anything else you would recommend to facilitate this process? I mean, it is labor-intensive to sit down and think. And you started your seminar today by saying that thinking is what is needed. And that takes time. I mean, so it takes time to manage time.
Yeah. Well, there's a great rule. What you've seen is it's a 10-to-1 rule. For every minute that you invest in planning and organizing and thinking through your goals, you actually save 10 minutes in accomplishing those goals. So the payoff is 1,000%. Now, I sometimes say to people, if I could offer you 10-to-1 return on your money, absolutely guaranteed, completely under your control, no risk, would you take it? Well, you'll say, of course. How much would you invest? As much as I had. If you get 10-to-1, guaranteed, no risk. Well, it's the same thing with your time. When you invest your time in planning, you actually get a 10-to-1 payoff. So, yes, it takes a little bit of time. But, for instance, if each day, it takes about 10 minutes to plan your day, according to the estimates. That means that if you take 10 minutes to think through your day, set priorities, and choose your most important task and start on that, it takes 10 minutes. But it'll save you 2 hours of productive time. The very first day you do it, you'll have increased your productivity by 25%. You'll increase your income by 25%. If you add to that and you start on your most important task and you concentrate on it single-mindedly until it's complete, you'll double your productivity that day. So the time spent thinking about what you want and planning, in retrospect, I've had this discussion recently, the biggest mistake we make, in retrospect, we say, you know, if I'd only thought about that a little bit more, I would have done something differently. If I'd only given that more thought, if I'd only looked into it, done more investigation, I wouldn't have made that mistake, which set me back a week, a month, or a year. So the time that you invest in thinking is the most valuable time that you can possibly invest in your life.
Mm. Okay.
You're doing all the right things. Just keep it up.
Okay.
And remember, Rima, and the other people listening, you wouldn't be on this call if you weren't impatient. And impatience is a good thing. Impatience drives you and motivates you. But it also means that you want to achieve your goals far faster than what is physically possible. So impatience is a good thing because it motivates you, it drives you forward, makes you more ambitious, but it also makes you impatient for a result. So it's okay. It's okay to be impatient. If you weren't impatient, you'd be complacent. And if you're complacent, you never accomplish anything. So it's okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Rima. One more question.
Thank you, Rima. Our next question comes from Scott. Scott, please state your question.
Yes, Brian, thank you very much. I'm in the midst of, one, considering whether to become a Focal Point consultant, and I'm at a career crossroads in general.
Yes.
And one of the issues that I'm having, which is part of productivity, is out of all of these great options I now that lie before me in terms of what I do with the rest of my life after a very successful career in corporate America, I'm having difficulty choosing among, let's say, the three, because they all look great, but they all have uncertainty, and I'm having difficulty dealing with the uncertainty after having spent so much time in corporate America.
Yes. Well, it's very hard. Again, there's countless studies on it. It's very hard to make a transition from working in corporate America where so many things are taken care of and to being an entrepreneur, and many people can't make that transition. Many people make it extremely successfully. So you have to look into your heart, and you have to ask yourself, imagine you had $20 million in the bank, and you only had $10 million to live. We call this the 20-10 question. You have $20 million in the bank, but unfortunately you have a hereditary illness, and you're going to drop stone dead in 10 years. So you have to work at something. So what would you choose to work at? What would you really enjoy? If you could be really good at something, what would you like to be really good at? I mean, if you could do a particular job really well, what would you want to be really good at doing? What would give you a lot of satisfaction? Another question you ask is, what would you work at if you didn't need the money? What would you work at for free just because you enjoy doing it and the results you get? And always you have to define in terms of the people that you're working with and for. We're only happy in life when we're doing something that somehow has a positive effect on the lives or work of other people. Human beings are designed so that we are designed for service. We're designed to serve other people in some way. And we are only happy when we are, when we feel that we are serving other people. Some of the happiest people in the world are missionaries who work in dreadful conditions in third world countries, because every single day they have this feeling that they're really helping people that would not be helped without them. So ask yourself, what kind of people do you want to help, serve? Whose life do you want to improve? What kind of work do you want to do that you'd really enjoy? You'd do it if you weren't being paid for it? What kind of indifference do you want to make in the world? What sort of things make you happy when you achieve the result? And remember, it's never the money. The money is not the most important. The most important thing is what makes you really happy when you're doing it and doing it well. And those are the way you make it.
Thank you, Brian. That's excellent advice. Guys, one quick follow-up on the productivity and the time management.
Yes.
It's a quick one. In terms of doing the to-do list, is Is it critical that you do it in the evening? I tend to do it in the morning when I'm rested.
So do I. Sometimes I do it in the evening. Some people say it's a great idea to do it at night because your subconscious works on it overnight. Other times I'll get up in the morning. Sometimes the last thing I'll do in the evening is I'll make up my to-do list for the next day. Other times I'll get up in the morning and the first thing I'll do is make up the list before I start. So there's no right or wrong.
Thank you.
Thank you. Make a good choice.
Well.
Do what makes you happy. Okay. Well, let us wrap it up for the day. I hope you've enjoyed this teleconference. I'm going to send you all the materials and the outline of all the stuff that we just talked about, plus everything that we promised you. And I could just say this one thing, is that your quality of your time management determines the quality of your life. And once you get your time and your life under control, everything else seems to get under control as well. You get twice as much done, you feel much happier, you spend more time doing the things that you enjoy with the people that you care about. So I wish you a wonderful Christmas, a wonderful New Year's, and may 2008 be the best year of your life. Thank
you. You've got mail.
You've got mail. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.